It's time for Knox Talk, a behind-the-scenes look at the business side of college sports, featuring Paul Sickman from Knox Sports and Brandon Parks from the Vol Network. Now for today's show.
Welcome to yet another edition of Knox Talk. Today is Wednesday, the 12th of June, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend Brandon Parks from the University of Tennessee. When we recorded this, buddy, we are on a collision course to meet in Omaha. I hope when this actually comes out, that is still the case. We just talked about it. I would love to have done a podcast, but you're not coming.
I will be on the East Coast of the United States on the what will be the 14th, which could be our collision court date with Destiny, with the Vols and the Seminoles. Hopefully that's going to play out, although we've got two big super regionals that we have to host this coming weekend, and then see what happens in Omaha.
We'll see what happens. I hope it is. I hope it does happen, because I know Link Jarrett loves playing Tennessee, so we'll see if that doesn't come to fruition. In the meantime, we're going to talk today about ROI in sponsorships and how we can better evaluate our respective deals. There is nothing more important to sponsors than what they get back. And I think you wrote me in a text when we were talking about topics, and you said that this is something that has certainly shifted and everyone's getting better at it. And I'm sure you're no exception.
Yeah. And if you look at just how our industry has evolved, let's say over the last 10 years, but really over the last 20 years, when I started with the Vol Network in 2000, sponsorship was a couple spots on the radio network during a game broadcast, an ad in the souvenir program, and a couple of season tickets. And that's sponsorship. And right. It was really about the association with the school in your market. And you hope that you're building your brand, and you hope that it incrementally drives some business and some revenue. But my, how our world has changed. That is not what our world looks like today. And I think as marketers representing companies dive into this, the sports is treated just like any other marketing opportunity that's available, and that there is an expectation that there's going to be a return on investment. And, you know, the building of the brand is always going to be important of any company that you work with. The association with our specific brands in college is always going to be a key play in that. But we as an industry have had to get better around being able to incrementally drive revenue and business for the companies that we're representing, and do so in a way where we can respond to them and show them proof of performance. And I think we've gotten better at it. And I think we're learning, and we have far more marketing tools today than we did 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And that continues to evolve. And while the brand play is really important, and while the association is really important, we get challenged more now around, show us how this works year over year from an ROI standpoint. And if it does, then you've carved out a niche, certainly within certain companies, where you're a cornerstone or a fabric of what they do on an annual basis, because you not only deliver all the feel good, you deliver results on top of that.
That's right. And quite honestly, you know, shameless plug coming for my company, Knox Sports, but most of our clients, ROI on their sports relationships has never really been easier. We talk really at length, every time we go into any new deal, even a renewal, what are your goals and objectives on this deal? And what does that mean to your bottom line? So let's construct the partnership completely and absolutely around what that goal and objective is. And so knowing that that is an open book, that they're going to tell us what success looks like, then our goal then is to basically educate the partner in your University of Tennessee or any other school that we're working with, any team at all. Hey, this is what success looks like for this particular client. And it's unique, but this is what success looks like. And as long as you know that, and you know, hey, okay, now I know what success looks like, I know what the client wants here, then we can get there. Because even if we're halfway through, if you know what success looks like and this is what the goal is, you're going to do whatever it takes. So that means kind of going beyond the contract to make it look like a success, so they'll renew. So it's never, ever been easier in sports for us to get to the ROI piece. And so what you want to do today, which I think is great, is we're going to talk about some specific examples, and we've got that certainly both of us on what ROI can look like from a success standpoint in sports, and really what every client should ask for. Because and at the end, we'll talk a little bit about some of the old school, like you talked about, even how to change the metrics on how you view that in terms of success. But I'll let you go first, Brandon. I've got three or four examples I'll go through, but I'll let you start with one.
Sure. And let me step back on 1 second, one point back to what you're talking about in the beginning of what are the partnership goals around a relationship and what's going to make it successful. I will tell you, as a seller, it's almost like we had to retrain our brain to start at the goal process first and then back our way into, okay, here are all the assets that I have, here are all the tools that I have in the toolbox that we can plug in to accomplish all these goals versus going to market and presenting to Knox Sports, hey, I've got this great new digital sign on my video board. Would love to have one of your clients on that board.
Right.
That was the old school way of
Right.
doing it.
No, it's 100% right. If you do it that way, you're not going to get a sale right now because you've got to talk. You've got to, and you also can't guess, right? That listening
That's
part of it
right.
is important. You say, okay, you know, you used to in the sales process, you literally had to guess what their objective was, and you
Right.
created a package that you hoped was on target. And we still do that a little bit, but the listening part of the process, like you just said, you have to retrain yourself to say, okay, this is what their objective is. Now I know the assets I can use.
Hey, and let me ask you this. Generally speaking, a lot of our conversations will start around some general objectives. Those typically aren't, I mentioned a few of those earlier, but okay, one, we want to help continue to build the brand, even as established as a brand may be. It needs to be current and have frequency and being in front of the fan base. Two, we want to create that association that exists where the brand in their category has an alignment with our affinity brands, which is a differentiator. We obviously want to drive incremental sales. We know there's a baseline of revenue that exists with a company. How can we give them a lift and incrementally increase sales? Boosting employee morale is one that gets talked about, certainly with companies that have larger employee bases. And then also, we have had campaigns where we're trying to help companies hire new employees. So you really bottle up those. That's at the core, probably, of just about every conversation, either all of those or a certain select number of those. Would
That's
you
true.
agree? And is there
Yeah,
others?
I agree. I think, but usually that if you focus on too many, you're going to fail at all of them. So I think you have to, with a good relationship, you want to say, okay, here is the key. And you want to, A, you want to pay for it. I mean, you want to pay for it. It's as simple as that. And so how do you pay for it? And that may be, if it's a $50,000 deal or $1 million deal, you got to figure out, how do I justify this deal? And in the old school, it was spots and dots. And what we want to talk about today is kind of that's the specificities behind that. Now, some of those other goals you talk about, employee morale and helping hire people, those things are nice, and they are objectives, and you have to address them. But for us, for our client base, 90% of the folks that we're representing right now, they're going to say, okay, this deal cost me X, bring it back. That's it.
Right.
And so
Yeah.
we just got to go do it. It's as simple as that. So,
Yeah. I
and probably the easiest example of that, Brandon, is the concession-centric clients, right? That's the easiest example. You know, you say for years, the answer was, hey, listen, you can do concessions, but just know it's not going to pay for itself. And that is still true if you look at it as an only concession deal. But I think where things have kind of evolved is we have multiple concession-centric clients. And in those categories, you look at it as two pieces. The number one, what is the sales number that certainly is going to be sold at all the venues that school is operating in? So what does that do for your bottom line? But then what you have to do is say, okay, now outside of that, how do we make a difference for you in the marketplace? And what does that mean for you over the course of a year? How many more hot dogs or pizzas or whatever else do I need to sell for you to make it so it's a break-even proposition or a money-making proposition? And if I get to that break-even point, there's no reason you should ever say no to me. You should always
Correct.
renew. And so when you look at concessions, you know, the old school of just, hey, it's a concession partner, I'm going to put a logo up on a sign or on the building, that should be dead. That's not the way to do business. So the concession deals are great opportunities to get as close as you can to break even, and then using inventory that you guys obviously have to try to make that pop and make it a break even or better proposition based on all the other things you're doing.
Exactly. Another example, lead generation. We get that a lot. companies ask about that. And I'm going to tell you that really has been defined and asked for by more traditional categories. Now, two examples, our banking partner in the financial services category, and then also our insurance partner on the auto, home, and life side, both want to incrementally drive business through lead generation. We've gotten better and better at that. Good example, each of them run a couple of two-week social media register to win campaigns with us. And usually it's for some grand experience around Tennessee athletics, whether it be football, basketball, baseball, et cetera. It's a social campaign that lives on social media with paid impressions behind it. There's a landing page for the campaign where we are asking for first name, last name, email address, and zip code. And then there are two other questions at the bottom relative to, in the banking example, yes, please check the box if you would like to receive more information about new to bank checking accounts or loan information. And then once a fan registers for that, that populates for us. And so, good example, the last lead gen campaign we did for the bank, we had almost 9,000 registrations in a two-week period. And of the 9,000 registrations, 1,900 people asked to receive additional information or be contacted by the bank about financial services products. So that's 1,900 leads that we generated off of a two-week campaign. Now, what the bank did to make it even more effective is they included the zip code as a data point that had to be included in the registration. And so they then took the database of those 1,900, divided it by zip code, and each banker in those zip codes received that database to then follow up and do lead generation around it. The bank took it another step further, ran their own internal campaign to see who could generate the most revenue off of those 1,900 leads. And then at the end of the day, they can come back to us and say, this created X number of new to bank clients for us, or this generated X amount of loan revenue for us.
And yeah, so I love the fact that the bank had an internal contest. That's amazing.
Yes. And if you see the process from the very beginning all the way to the very end, and you do it effectively, it can work. Yeah. But people have to be willing to get into the details of it.
We are. I'm not sure, Brandon, if there's a company in the country that does more registered wins than Knox Sports. We actually have our own Learfield legal department that deals with our stuff. We do so many of them. They review our stuff so much. And we have a Knox Sports rule, true story, with Learfield's legal department. So the stuff that we have, it goes quickly because we've done it so many times. And I mean, I will tell you that, yes, insurance is incredible. We have a lot of insurance clients around the country that do that. And we actually have a couple contracts. I'm not going to name names to get people in trouble, but we have a couple contracts with Learfield schools where we have a minimum guarantee in terms of opt-ins in the contract. And so that client year over year, knows that they're going to get, and this, you know, in one case it's 20,000, another case is 30,000 opt-ins annually. And so we have a certain number of contests with those schools to make sure we get to that number. Now, in the case of, we have a furniture, store, that does a data collection. What they do is after they capture that email, they start a drip campaign through email. They give it a 24-month period and find out how much those names generated. This is a local store. We have one relationship with a baseball team that we have somewhere between 50 and 75,000 names a year with them that we deliver email addresses for. And that's just one team. They do it with all the local teams. So they then are able to look at the sales based on those emails that are generated. They are able to apply it directly against that team's relationship. And they know, hey, did it pay for itself or not? With the insurance client we have, similar client to y'all have, they do a five-year runner on a lead. And what you said was really important. These are people that are registering for Tennessee contests. In this, the other cases, they're registering for schools all over the country. Those are fans of the school because they're registering for a contest where they are excited about entering. What that means is that when that your insurance client, my insurance client, or anyone banking client, when they call or contact that person, when they use your marks and your IP and even your words and say, hey, thanks for registering for the Tennessee experience, thanks for registering for the Indiana experience, thanks for registering whatever it is, when they use that, that is a warm lead. They have an opportunity to talk to that person about something they already know they love. And so
Right.
you're down the road from a sales perspective because you've already taken the IP and you've now entrenched it because you know you have a fan. And let's talk about what happened last night. Let's talk about the Vols baseball weekend. And then next thing you know, they bought something. And so that insurance client that I'm talking about here, they have a 5-year runner on those names. And they, same thing, they make their agents call within 36 hours, within 1 week, and then within 1 month, and they follow up. And then once they buy something or get anything in the pipeline, if they grow their business through different lines of business, they buy a car insurance policy, the next thing you know, they buy home, and then they buy the life. All of that is a money proposition to the client. And they again put it against that whole relationship. So the 5-year runner on this promotion generated $254,000 of business for this insurance client. Okay, what did we spend on the deal? So all of that is why ROI is easy now. ROI is easy. When you do data capture, like you're doing it well, like we certainly do it well across the country, the client is very, very easily able to know it's going to work or not. Now, does it work 100% of the time? No, but that's what we have to push the buttons in terms of what is the experience? Did we get enough names? Did the opt-in, was it too difficult? All those little tiny minutia things that you and I work on all the time.
Right.
But the ROI is there for the client. We now can paint a picture, a clear picture of what that looks like and how it comes back.
So let's go back to social media for a second. So we've talked about lead generation. We have a number of clients who want us to help them grow their social media following. And in a similar vein, there are a number of clients where we run basically register to win campaigns, which you register by retweeting or sharing content of a client.
Or
And
going to their site to get the information, or so you're landing
exactly.
on their page and you and that pixel has captured you. Yes.
Exactly. And so one data point that gets created is, okay, company is starting with 10,000 followers. They want to grow it to 20,000 in a year. Okay. A register to win social media campaign, like that's one way to help them do that. And that becomes an additional data point, how we grow social media following. For a lot of retail clients, and specifically our sporting goods partner, they have rewards programs. And they know already that for every person they sign up for the rewards program, it's worth X amount of dollars in annual revenue. And that's a pretty easy data point to then be able to multiply out. If we sign up 5,000 people for their rewards program, and I'm just going to use a monetary number, just $100, that it's worth $100 every time somebody signs up in sales, and you do the math on that, well, you can quantify that out as another data point around ROI.
Yeah, love it. And that's very important. And that's why it's easier now. It just is. I mean, you know, we circling back to what you said at the very beginning, you know, when we first started this business, the two dinosaurs that we are, I mean, we were selling program ads and signage. And, you know, people wondered, is it worth it? And you were basically evaluating it on how much TV time it was getting and then trying to extrapolate some magic number for TV time, which I think is somewhat false now because TV is ubiquitous. And I'm not sure that in you and I, either one of us truly believe that, you know, a logo on a television is going to be change your business dramatically. But what I tell people that are into the brand, because yes, sports still does branding better than anybody. Sports is still the best at it. If you want to have your brand show up, use IP and use sports because your brand will be a difference maker. But what I tell people who still want to live in that old school a little bit, maybe you have combinations of data and other things, but you want to evaluate how your brand is doing, go old school with evaluating your brand. Get students or interns to do exit surveys at the beginning of your sponsorship, and then the middle, and then at the end of your relationship. And that simple local piece where you ask people, who was the automaker? Who was the grocery store? Who was the insurance partner of this particular school or that particular property? And you do it at the beginning, middle, and end, and then just empirically see if that changed. And that's what people, you know, people are doing it online, but I don't even believe them because they're using television as the answer. And these are not local people who are impacting your business. So I still think there's a way to empirically measure to have an ROI on a brand-centric effort. I think that's important to be able to do something like that. I think that's really key. And I think that that's still an answer from an ROI perspective. And it's not hard. It's not hard to execute that. We have about a few minutes left, Brandon. Any other great examples you got? Because I got one that I will share with you if you got if you don't have anything.
Talk about your example, and then I'm going to talk about the future, how we continue to evolve.
Okay, I have one more that I thought was really interesting, and I don't want to, give away all the great ideas we ever have, but I think this one was great because we had a banks are always difficult, right? Banks are, and one of the things we've done with banks, they want to have a better social media following. The reason is because people, in general, their phone is their bank now. They're not going into places, and so a lot of banks were changing the way that we, certainly from a sports perspective, we're changing the outlook of how banks do business. But one of the challenges has always been from banks is how do the commercial department make hay within a sports deal? And entertainment is the best vehicle in the world to do that. And so how do you measure that? Well, I'll give you an example. We did a deal with an NFL team years ago with one of our bank partners, and we basically hosted a fantasy football event at a bank. The bank hosted a fantasy football event at the pro football facility. They each got to invite nine non-potential clients as their fantasy football table. And so each commercial developer, each commercial bank manager got nine guests to come. Well, at the end of that partnership, so 16 weeks later, obviously a percentage of those nine people all became clients of the bank. And when they were able to look at the amount of money generated from the commercial department from that one event, it paid for the entire relationship and it was 10 figures.
Yep.
Okay,
Ten figures. Ten
10.
figures. Yeah.
Yes. So I think that's one of the things that's really, really important is that it's we sometimes we get lost on, I hope it works, but if you track and you really dig in, even the hospitality piece of it can have an ROI that is trackable and is a reason to come back and do business again.
No, you're exactly right. Hospitality, experiential, certainly a lot. You see that a lot in the business to business conversations that we have. And I've had several clients that have said, I know that the experiential part of this will drive enough revenue to pay for my sponsorship. And so the marketing that goes along with it really is the icing on the cake because I'm going to drive enough business with an experience that my prospects or my current clients can't get anywhere else. And I can easily identify how much business that drives. Then the marketing piece of it's gravy. And I think what all of this leads to is consistency and long-term relationships. It's what will keep clients coming back year after year after year. And you and I have talked about this. The worst agreement we can do is the deal that is here for 1 year and gone the next because we're ultimately replacing it.
That's right.
And so I would rather roll up my sleeves, dig in, and dive into ROI and come up with objectives and goals and ways to accomplish it. Because if I do that, it's going to be really, really hard for them not to want to come back and be involved in future years.
Right. And we
Now,
just said it's never easier to get ROI. So
yeah.
if it's not hard and the relationship is there, it's go time.
Yeah. And so, okay. So, futuristically, where I think we're going to get even better at ROI is all of us are in the race for first-party data. And we as an industry are getting better and better and better about it. And we are starting to scratch the surface around lead gen campaigns that target specific demos in the market. And so our insurance company now, we have campaigns that we run that specifically target young alumni and young alumni that are living in larger markets within our state that are in certain fields of industry. And it's fascinating because we're going to be able to, instead of just saying we're reaching the Tennessee fan base, we're going to be able to go in and reach a certain population of that Tennessee fan base because they believe that is worth mining down into.
Yep.
And we're going to get better and better with it.
I completely agree. Well, Buddy Rowe, good luck on your road. I'm sorry we're not going to be together in Omaha, but maybe we one of us will make it. And if one of us does, I damn sure hope it's me. All right.
I was going to say, I hope you have fun in Omaha, but not too much fun.
So on behalf of Brandon Parks, I'm Paul Sickman with Knox Sports Marketing. We thank you for listening to another edition of Knox Talk. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks. Take care, everybody.